Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is Dan Friedel, and for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's Monday, December 30th. There's just one more day left in 2019 after today. A quick shout-out to Baltimore's Gervonta Davis, who grew up just about 60 kilometers north of VOA's studios, who won the WBA lightweight title in a 12-round knockout of Cuba's Yuriorkis Gamboa on Saturday night. Congrats, Gervonta. We're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by Prince Nesta to get us caught up on European soccer. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Dan. Liverpool's irresistible march to the Premier League title continued on Sunday, with the Reds beating Wolverhampton Wanderers 1-0 at Anfield. Senegalese speedster Sadio Mane scored the only goal of the match to ensure the Reds secured a 13-point lead at the top of the standings. Chelsea ruined Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta's home debut after producing a stunning late comeback to beat Arsenal 2-1 in Sunday's London derby played at the Emirates Stadium. Gabon talisman Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang gave the host the lead in the 13th minute, when Arsenal goalkeeper Bernd Leno's howler handed Jorginho an equalizer on a plate after 83 minutes. 4 minutes later, English striker of Nigerian descent Tammy Abraham settled a bad-tempered London derby when he drilled through Leno's legs to take all 3 points for the Blues. Arsenal will return to Premier League action on New Year's Day when they host Manchester United at the Emirates. Manchester City will start 2020 14 points behind Premier League leaders Liverpool after securing second-half goals from Sergio Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne to beat Sheffield United 2-0 at the Etihad Stadium.
Prince, I saw Leicester City finally got back on the winning side of the ledger.
Yeah, Nigerian international Kelechi Iheanacho scored his third Premier League goal of the season for Leicester City in their 2-1 victory against West Ham United at the King Power Stadium. West Ham United responded quickly as Pablo netted the equalizer in the last minute of the first half before Demiray Gray's game-winning goal notched the win. Harry Kane was Tottenham's savior once again, as the Spurs keeper slotted home from the penalty spot to earn a 2-2 draw at Norwich, while Manchester United climbed to fifth in the Premier League after 2-0 win at Burnley secured by goals from Antoine Martial and Marcus Rashford.
Prince, since the other European leagues were on a break for Christmas, I thought it might be good to get caught up on any transfer news. I heard my man Zlatan is on the move again.
Yeah, I've got a few updates to share, Dan. West Ham United have actually announced David Moyes as their new head coach for the second time following the sacking of Manuel Pellegrini. Pellegrini is actually sacked after a dreadful run of form that has included just 2 wins since September. It will also be remembered that David Moyes actually guided the club in the 2018 season to safety and departed at the end of the season after only 6 months at the helm. Borussia Dortmund have also signed highly rated 19-year-old Norway international striker Erling Haaland from Red Bull Salzburg after meeting his $22 million buyout close. Then, another interesting transfer update will have to be that of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who has returned to European football at the age of 38 after agreeing to rejoin Italian club AC Milan. Liverpool are also set to complete the signing of Red Bull Salzburg winger Takumi Minamino in January after the club confirmed a deal has been reached between the two clubs.
Prince, here we are with the clock ticking down on 2019, so what were some of your most memorable moments of the year?
Oh, I've got a few of them, Dan. The first one being the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team winning the 2019 World Cup and becoming the most successful women's national soccer team in the history of the Women's World Cup was actually a major highlight as far as this year is concerned. and Lionel Messi also being crowned the world's best player for the first time since 2015 and on a record sixth occasion overall after seeing off a strong competition from the likes of Liverpool's Virgil van Dijk. It will be remembered that Messi actually won La Liga. He won the Spanish Supercopa, the Pichichi for Spain's top scorer, the Golden Boot for being Europe's leading marksman, and he was also the Champions League's most successful scorer, scoring 12 goals in total last term. It has also been an incredibly successful year for Liverpool, who've won the Champions League and the Club World Cup finals, and in addition to which they also have a 13-point lead at the top of the English Premier League. And a big shout-out also going out to Algeria, who were crowned African Cup of Nations champions for only the second time in its history after edging past Senegal 1-0. However, Dan, I must also mention that it's been a bad year for my team Arsenal, who have been outclassed, outfought, outplayed, and they're actually currently lying 12th on the English Premier League table with only 24 points. Goodness gracious. I'm Prince Nesta on the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Prince. And of course, anytime on the Sunny Side of Sports that we can say Pichichi, it's a good show. Prince, we hope you have a sporty 2020. Speaking of the U.S. women's national team, my VOA colleague Gwen Uten is here now with this wrap on a big year for the team and the end of an era as longtime coach Jill Ellis, who spent her teenage years just outside of Washington, D.C. in Virginia, wrapped up her tenure. Welcome, Gwen.
In October 2019, the U.S. women's national team wrapped up their World Cup victory tour and marked the end of an era. Following their 1-1 draw with South Korea, celebrated head coach Jill Ellis gave an emotional press conference in Chicago and said goodbye to her women's national team.
It's a sense of feeling like, you know, it's a story written and it's a chapter closed and it's on to, you know, other things. But it's been an unbelievable journey. And, you know, I said to the players, I'm like, it's been the most rewarding job I've ever had, the hardest job I've ever had, and the job that has helped me, I think, grow. And ultimately, that's, you know, that's what I want. I want for my family. I always want to take one day and be one day better and continue to kind of grow as a person. And this job has stretched me, and it's been, you know, I think it's not regret. It's not relief. It's honestly a big smile on my face saying I've enjoyed this and, ready for what's next.
Ellis joined the U.S. Soccer Federation's coaching system in 2000 and began coaching the women's national team in 2014. She announced her retirement after the team defended their World Cup title in France in the summer of 2019. Ellis has never lost a World Cup match, and she is the only coach ever to win back-to-back Women's World Cup titles. She's regarded as the most successful coach in women's national team history, and Ellis says she could not have reached that level of achievement alone.
I've had amazing staff, and I'll miss them because, as I said to them last night, they're like an extended family. Not even extended family, they're my family, my other family on the road. And, you know, and the players and everybody, I think that's just been the best part of this job is building relationships. And I'm not going to remember games so much as I'm going to remember all these people that helped me get where I am.
During her World Cup victory tour, Ellis earned her 106th victory and set a new record for the U.S. women's national team. But Ellis says for her, the numbers don't matter in the end.
It never honestly was about a number. So, you know, I'm privileged to have done this job for so long and played so many games. And, yeah, it's just been an honor, and numbers and all that kind of fade away. It becomes about, you know, the players and the staff and the people and just the memories. So I've got a trunk full of memories from this for sure. And it's been fantastic.
Weeks after Ellis officially stepped down as head coach, Vlatko Andonovski was named her successor, and he said the first thing on his agenda is qualifying for the 2020 Olympic Games.
Most importantly for us is to qualify for the tournament, and that's going to be our first thing on the agenda. And we have a very, very experienced team. We have players that have been in the on the international stage. They've won big games, big tournaments. So we're going to rely heavily on them, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to expand the roster. It doesn't mean that we're not going to expand the pool and deepen the pool. We're going to look at new players, and at the end, the ones that perform the best at training, at game, will get a chance to be on the roster.
Andonovski has served as head coach in the National Women's Soccer League since 2013, a stint that included two championships in 2014 and 15. In 2019, he was named the National Women's Soccer League's Coach of the Year for a second time. The first was in 2013. He left his post as coach of Reign FC for the new position, and Andonovski expressed his deep respect for the members of the U.S. women's national team.
I'm very, very respectful of the drive, of the push that the players have. In fact, that's positive for me because they will translate to the field, and I have no doubt in my mind once they step on the field that they're going to be focused on what is important at that time. Once they put the jersey on, they put everything else on the side, and they're focused on winning games. They've proved that in the past, and like I said, I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to do that in the future.
And that future could include Tokyo, so we will keep our eye on the U.S. women's national team as they begin their quest to qualify for the Summer Olympic Games in 2020.
Thank you, Gwen, and thanks for your contributions to the show this year. Let's now continue our conversation with Toronto-based sports journalist Morgan Campbell, who's seen the evolution of the Toronto Raptors from an expansion team in the 1990s to the eventual NBA champion in 2019. I asked Morgan how, even with Kawhi Leonard moving to join the Los Angeles Clippers over the summer, the Raptors, who are still among one of the top teams in the NBA's Eastern Conference, are able to maintain this high level of play.
Yeah, well, okay, there's a couple things going on there. Cause one is that the Raptors benefit, in this sense, from being based outside of the United States, because there's still, for whatever reason, this perception that, you know, last season was fluke, and they benefited from some luck, you know, Kevin Durant's injury, Klay Thompson's injury, DeMarcus Cousins' injury. Like the Warriors were a little bit depleted, but at the same time, this is pro basketball. It's a long season, and part of being successful over the long run is keeping your best players in the lineup as long as possible. But at the same time, so we head into this season, the Raptors are still highly successful, even without Kawhi Leonard, but don't often enter these conversations in the U.S. media about the Eastern Conference elite. So they still get to be underdogs to the extent that that helps at the pro level. They don't have to worry about the pressure of being the favorites. They don't have to worry about really living up to expectations. They can still go out there and play freely the same way they did last year, not as championship favorites who are burdened by expectation, but just as like a really good team who can just go out and play to the level that they can. But the second thing, and again, this is where Masai Ujiri gets a lot of credit, because he's the common denominator here, right? Like the coaches have changed, but Ujiri is at the head of the organization. He set up this infrastructure. Is that from a player development standpoint, you know, the Raptors have stood out. Again, they've taken guys like Chris Boucher, Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, guys who had an NBA potential, standout NBA player potential, but needed time and space to refine it. He's used the minor league system much more extensively and much more intelligently than other teams have. But they've also been able to develop guys like at the NBA level. And this is what you haven't seen a lot of, but like Pascal Siakam is an absolute phenomenon, right? Like this guy comes into the league and he plays, has one pretty good season. And then last year he just jumped up two or three levels and became, you know, an all-star caliber player. Here's a guy who gets deep into the playoffs. So now you're playing against the best people you've played against all year, and he's out here putting up 28, 33 points in the finals. And so this is a guy that, like, conceivably wins the NBA's Most Improved Player award last season and is still improving. And again, that's a credit, obviously, to Siakam, to his talent, to his work ethic, to his professionalism, but also to the team for realizing, you know, there are a lot of, well, relatively speaking in the NBA, you know, there's 6'9" guys everywhere in that league. But to take this particular 6'9" guy and see the potential in him, see what he can become as opposed to what he is when he walks in the door, and do the best to bring that out of him, that is about the way the team is built, the way the team is structured. And again, that goes back to the infrastructure that Masai Ujiri has built.
I'm Dan Friedell in for Sonny Young, and we're talking with Toronto-based sports journalist Morgan Campbell about the two key Africans who played a role in the Raptors championship season. Morgan just now was talking about Pascal Siakam, the Cameroonian forward, and I wanted to know what he's like when the cameras aren't on.
Yeah, a few things stand out about Pascal Siakam. One, again, that he's tremendously hardworking. And again, his college career would not necessarily have indicated that he would become this type of pro player. Like, he was a good player in college, but he was a talented player in college. And the Raptors have really succeeded in, one, not just seeing a guy that's talented, but envisioning, like, what he could become and then helping him turn himself into that. So, again, as opposed to just being a guy that's 6'9" and can run, block a few shots here and there. Like, he has built this really complete, well-rounded, versatile game that you wouldn't necessarily have predicted that he could build if you just looked at his numbers in college. So that's the first thing. And it's so hard to do that, like, at the pro level because the game moves so fast. You know, most people make their biggest improvements, you know, earlier on in their life, and it's kind of a smoother transition to the pro game. Here's a guy that was still relatively raw when he came to the pros and has turned himself into, and at this point you wouldn't know that he didn't make his biggest improvements until his early 20s. Like, he dribbles the ball, handles the ball like he's been doing it, like he grew up as a point guard, which he didn't, which is that's what's amazing about Pascal Siakam, and it speaks to his work ethic. You know, and Siakam, too, is he understands, like, his role as an ambassador for the team. So he's one of the few guys on the team, like, even now, like, as a fairly well-known player, we'll rarely turn down an interview request. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff. He and I had a long conversation last year about shoes, because this will tell you, like, how his stature has elevated in the last 12 months. Because this time last year, Pascal Siakam was wearing Kevin Durant model Nikes, but he's wearing the KD 10s, even though the KD 11s had come out before last season. He didn't like them. They weren't comfortable. So he had taken the previous season's shoes and was just trying to stretch them through another season. And I asked him, like, well, what's going to happen if you guys go deep into the playoffs? He's like, man, I got these four pairs of shoes and I'm trying to make them last all the way till June. But I guess the people at Nike read that story, because then by the time the playoffs arrived, he was wearing brand new shoes that I guess were comfortable for him, and they made sure that he had shoes that, you know, weren't the same shoes you could get in the store that were fit specifically to his feet. And then the third thing about him, and again, this has to do with him understanding his role as an ambassador, not just for the team, but for his hometown, for his country, for African players in general, but Cameroonians specifically. And here's what I mean. During the NBA finals, you know, you had media there from all over the world. And Pascal Siakam speaks more than one language. French, obviously, is his first language, or one of his first languages, because he grew up in Cameroon. So during these news conferences, he would field questions in English and answer the questions in English. We'd also take questions in French. And so these French reporters from Canada, from Montreal, from Ottawa, speaking a French a dialect of French that is very clearly Canadian. Like if you've heard different French speakers speak, you understand this French is Canadian French. And Pascal Siakam would answer in very neutral Parisian French, right?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So then what happens after that is these other guys ask a question. Now, I don't know where they're from. I've never seen these guys before. But the French they're speaking is very different from what the guys from Quebec speak, and is very different from Parisian French. It's French. It's very clearly French. It's not like a Creole or anything like that. It's French. But the accent is very different. The dialect is very different. And so the interviewer and Pascal Siakam start cracking up. So it becomes clear that these guys are from Cameroon. And Pascal is from Cameroon. So whatever dialect of French they were speaking, it was something someone from Cameroon recognized. And then Pascal Siakam answers in that same accent, in that same dialect. The point being, like, doesn't matter how far he's gone in the NBA, he's not a guy that, forgets where he came from. He's not a guy that, acts like he's too good to speak directly to the people from his hometown, because these guys showed up at the news conference speaking not just the language but the dialect, and Pascal Siakam answered right back in the dialect, and they had a good laugh. No one else understood what the heck they were talking about, but it must have been something funny because they were laughing really hard.
That's sports writer Morgan Campbell in Toronto, and I'm Dan Friedell in for Sonny Young. You're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America, and speaking of the Toronto Raptors, Kawhi Leonard was named the Associated Press Male Athlete of 2019.
Leonard comfortably won a vote by AP member sports editors and AP beat writers.
I tried to lead by example.
Kawhi Leonard had been dealing with a complicated leg issue and was traded from the San Antonio Spurs to the Toronto Raptors, and the Raptors went straight to the top.
I've been to the finals, and it's pretty much nothing new that I'm seeing out there. And just got to have fun with it and enjoy it.
And the Raptors beat the Golden State Warriors to take their first NBA title.
I just kept working hard, and had my mind set on this goal right here.
Leonard wound up leaving the Raptors in the summer for the L.A. Clippers. Former coach Greg Popovich said Kawhi Leonard is not a big talker, just a good guy who wanted to be good. I'm Ed Donahue.
Back to my conversation with Morgan, I asked him about super teams. Kawhi Leonard back in Los Angeles. Are we seeing the end of super teams, Morgan?
Like an NBA team can't really do what the Yankees have done, because you just can't go sign all the guys because you have to pay this luxury tax. This is why you have all these NBA players, playing musical chairs in the offseason, because the players now, like the Kawhi Leonards and LeBron James of the world, have figured out that they have as much influence over where they go. Even if they're not free agents, they can influence where they go. But everyone's trying to make the salaries fit. And then the truth is, like, in pro sports, at that level of pro sports, you're talking about the elite of the elite of the elite. And so the degrees of separation between the best and the second best are always going to be really small. So you can build, you can spend a lot of money on the best players and have success overall, but once you get to the championship, if the team's good enough to play for the championship, they're good enough to play for the championship, no matter how they've been built. And so the fact that you have the biggest payroll, once you start playing in the finals, your biggest payroll doesn't really matter because you have to execute. And this is what you're seeing. This is what people forget. And so the Patriots, they've been successful year after year after year after year. The only people that really get paid at the Patriots are Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But they're very good, sort of like the Raptors are, just finding other people to fit in and making those guys better at the end of the season than they were at the beginning of the season. But this is what people forget about pro sports is, yes, a lot of times you do have to spend a lot of money. That's one way to make your team successful, if you can afford it and you can just consistently put the best players under contracts. But again, once you get to the finals, like, it almost doesn't matter how you got there. If you're good enough to be in the finals, you're good enough to be in the finals. And, the results don't care about how much your team spent to get there. You still have to win the game.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, right? Like, if you're good enough to be in the championship series, you're good enough to win.
That's Morgan Campbell, Toronto-based sports journalist, talking about the year in sports here in 2019. Thanks for joining us, Morgan. And that wraps up the December 30th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Workinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer PJ Elliott. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedell, in for VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. And that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa Show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is Science in a Minute.
University of Copenhagen researchers have extracted a complete human genome from 5,700-year-old chewing gum. They say it's the first time an entire ancient human genome has been extracted from anything other than human bones. The chewing gum, which is actually pitch or tar extracted from a birch tree, was found during archaeological excavations in southern Denmark. The scientists say they were also able to extract DNA from oral microorganisms and key human pathogens. After analyzing the genome, the scientists found that the ancient gum chewer was a female and was more closely related genetically to people from mainland Europe than those who lived in Scandinavia at the time. The genome also revealed that she probably had dark skin, dark hair, and blue eyes. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.